slow tonight.
What's mine doing? The pipe. Everyone, there's more people using the internet now, so.
Yeah, I know, man. Everyone's streaming the Netflix and the YouTube. I know I am.
And the CBS. Yeah, Picard's on tonight, so.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Formerly of the USS Enterprise.
Whoa, spoilers.
What? It's in the previews. No spoiling here.
Spoilers, no spoiling.
Cool. What's up?
Oh, man. Everything.
Well, first of all, you sound healthy, so that's good. That's a
yes.
good. That's a plus.
Got rid of the lung butter.
Oh, I was about to say that. Did I introduce you to that term?
Probably, yeah. I think so. It's mine now.
Lung gravy is another one you can use.
Ugh.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, recovered from the on and off cold, and hopefully not picking up anything new. Staying inside and working my butt off. That's what you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah, I guess. That's what I'm doing too, but I don't know if that's what we're supposed to be doing.
Get outside if it was nicer out here, man. It's just been bad spring, early spring, cold, rainy, windy BS.
You know, I'll tell you who's really struggling with this self-quarantine business, and that's Watson.
I'm sure he is.
He's a very social creature, and he hasn't been able to run and play and jump on other dogs for maybe a week now, a little over a week. So now whenever we go for a walk and he sees any living thing, he throws a fit. Like, he'll lay on the ground and roll and try to get them to play with him, and he'll kind of whine and do whatever he can to make that happen. But they closed down the park where we usually go. There are signs all over this park now saying, like, hey, don't get on the equipment. Don't sit at the picnic tables. It's, you know, off limits now. So I still walk and run around the perimeter of it. And we've gone to the dog park a couple of times, but there's never anybody else in there. So it's sort of a ghost town now.
Yeah, but he's getting all the attention from you and Jamie at home, right?
Yeah, it's not enough, though. He needs more, apparently. I assume Bucky's doing fine with the quarantine.
He's pulling through. He's a trooper. Yeah.
Is he struggling because he's getting too much attention now?
Oh, no. No such thing. If that ever happened, then I think something was wrong with him. Then I think he had the virus. Got a couple of projects that I've been working on, kind of alternating in the past couple of weeks. And I've kind of wanted to talk about it, but we've had other stuff on the plate for talking about. But I'd like to take a little bit of a deep dive into one of my iOS applications that I have been working on. Does that interest you?
Well, this whole world is very interesting to me. I know a little bit about hams now through you, but you have this whole sort of, there's this whole other like past Rockwell that's existed where you've built things and put things out and people use your things for, have been using your things for years. And, it's very interesting to me.
It's true, and I kind of lost sight of that for a long time because I've been so busy with RHR over the past couple of years that I haven't really devoted any time to these little utility apps that I wrote back in 2011 and 2012, and they've kind of been neglected and long in the tooth and not been updated as iOS has been updated. And so, let me just get into it. So this application that I wrote, it's called Soda Goat. Soda is SOTA, stands for Summits on the Air. And what this is kind of like a sub activity within ham radio, that it's a program that encourages you to go out and hike and bring your radio equipment with you and then hike up to a mountaintop and activate portable from the mountaintop. You usually have like a battery pack, some kind of portable antenna, a small lightweight radio. A lot of guys use Morse code because it's way more efficient to send your signal out as opposed to like trying to transmit your voice signal. And it's this kind of experiment of like, let's get outside, let's do something, let's and also, you know, learn how to operate under compromised conditions. You know, just know that you can throw a wire in a tree and plug in your radio and you can talk to anyone in the world. Like that's really, really cool. And that's one of the cool parts of the hobby that kind of drew me to it, is the kind of do-it-yourself aspect to it, you know?
Yeah.
And so the Summits on the Air thing, it has a point system. So if you go to a summit and you make at least four contacts, you've quote unquote activated the summit, and you get points for that depending on how tall the summit is. It's from like 1 to 10 points. And then if you're a chaser, so you're sitting at home in the shack, if you see that someone is on a summit right now, you can talk to them from your home shack, and then you also get points for that. So it's kind of encourages both people to, you know, get on the air and operate. And it's just fun, you know, because you get to see pictures and videos and of people doing these things and talk to people and see what the weather's like and what they're operating and all these crazy peaks and stuff. It's really, really fun. And there's no really like, the only awards are once you reach a certain amount of points, you get either a shack sloth or the mountain goat award, depending on if you're an activator or a chaser. You get like 10,000 points or something, and you think someone sends you a little plaque. I don't know how that works, but you know, it's just for fun.
Right. This is now, it's now making so much more sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Hams are always trying to look at ways to gamify the hobby. And maybe I'll get time to talk more about that later with the contest that's coming up this weekend. So I got really into this back in 2012, and I've got a bunch of videos on my YouTube. I'll put a couple links in the show notes to some of my earlier videos. I really kind of produced them and did a lot of, like, I brought a little Zoom microphone, I recorded it, and then I kind of did these little montages while I was talking and stuff. So experimented with like kite antennas and wire antennas and all kinds of stuff. But I wrote this app, and it is basically like just a database of all the summits. There's I forget how many. There's several tens of thousands of summits now in the database. And it also hooks up with the spotting and alerting system, which is this online web service where you can go and post like, hey, I'm going to be on this frequency at such and such a time. Go look for me there. Or if you're a chaser, hey, I just heard this person XYZ on this summit, ABC. Go talk to them and work them, right? So it's right. Kind of like connecting people and letting them know where you are. It's called spotting. Yeah, I wrote this app. I had to go through the Git history. It took me, at least from the first commit to 1.0, was 2 weeks in December of 2012. very, very simple. This is my second iOS app, so I kind of knew what to do. Pretty simple. Importing CSV data, screen scraping HTML from a web page, putting it into nice table views, and interfacing with some really rudimentary APIs and reverse engineering some things to get it to work, because there was no real API for this.
And all that in just two weeks.
Well, you know, I had kind of a head start, but also I was between jobs. Like, this was, I had just finished my degree, and I hadn't yet started my real jobby job out in California. I was just about to move out there, and I had all this time to, like, just do cool things. And so this is one of those products of that time, which is kind of rose-colored glasses at this point, right?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
So throughout the years, I updated the app, keep up with iOS trends and stuff, but over time, I eventually, like, I just lost interest in that part of the hobby. I haven't done activation in many years now, and I kind of let the app languish. And finally, the website made a bunch of breaking changes that broke the app, and I was just like, people were paying for the app. It was $2.99 in the App Store, or $1.99, I forget now. And, like, sending me email, like, hey, this doesn't work. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. I just don't have time to support it right now. Took down the app from the App Store.
Well, I think we talked about that specifically, right? At some point, like, you had mentioned on the show that you'd taken it down, and it felt kind of good just to sort of like remove it from the back of your mind, I suppose.
Yeah. And that was pretty short lived because, oh my God, I guess I completely forgotten like how many people had come to rely on this over the years. I mean, it sells between like 0 and 1 per day. So like, You know, over time, it really adds up. And I guess I completely lost sight of how critical this app was for people that enjoy this part of the hobby. And so I took the app down because I didn't want people to give me money for a broken app. But I didn't realize that if you upgraded your device, or if you deleted the app and tried to re-download it again, it would not let you. Like, even if you paid for it already.
Really?
It was just gone from the App Store. And I did not realize that. And that was obviously not at all what I had intended.
Right. You just didn't want any new users.
Mm-hmm. Because the app was still, like, half functional, right? And I wanted people to still be able to use it, but not a great situation. So my wife, Jess, and I talked about it. She's my better half. And that's for a reason, because she convinced me that, hey, you know, like, this is important. People really rely on this. And so I that was kind of, I took that, took her advice and started updating it and got it, basically did the minimum amount of work possible to get it functional on latest iOS with the new Summits on the Air website.
So is that Swift? Is that Objective-C? Probably Objective-C, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it was Objective-C. This is pre-Swift, and I just decided to keep it Objective-C. I do love Swift, but and I know you can do mixed projects with Objective-C and Swift. I just didn't want to go down that road for just consistency's sake. I'm comfortable with Objective-C. It's fine. So I just, you know, did that update. Now, on the other end of this is the API piece. So in the meantime, the Summits on Air website added single sign-on. So they use KeyCloak for their single sign-on thing there. You get it once and it logs you into like their forum and the spotting thing and all these other services that they provide. So that was great, but that involved a whole bunch of other hand-holding on my part to get someone signed in and, you know, posting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really want to do that on the app. In fact, I really couldn't do it on the app because I had to do all kinds of extra server-side stuff. Do you want to take a guess what server technologies I chose to implement this?
Yeah, let me see. You probably picked Express and MongoDB, probably.
Oh, yeah. It's a whole cluster of MongoDB servers, actually, for redundancy.
I'm assuming Phoenix?
Yes, yeah. So wrote this little Phoenix app using GraphQL for the API. The API is very small, but like it's just perfect for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I leaned very heavily on LiveView for this. So one of the big features of the app that has been broken for forever is push notifications. And like push notifications for this app are, I really wanted to make them really, really rich and configurable, lots of different settings. And building out that UI on native iOS was just, it sucked, man. I didn't want to have to build it. It's the same story that we was talking about before with writing JavaScript applications. Like you have to write the UI, then you have to write the API, and then you have to interface the two.
Right.
Like it's all this extra legwork that a person's going to go to like three times ever. You know, it's not a core thing of the app that they're touching every day. It's just it's a setting screen, and you don't have to be online to do it anyways. So basically when you go to the settings page and you go tap on push notifications, it just kicks you basically out to a browser, a web view. That's a live view. It's styled to look like iOS, but every tap you make on that thing is a live view interaction, and every change you make in real time is committed to the database as soon as you tap it. There's no saves. There's no, you know, just everything you make is just commits it to Postgres and updates the UI in response. And I was able to build that out so fast and deploy it. And also I can make changes to that without having to redeploy the whole iOS app, which of course is great.
Right. I was going to ask about that. How does that work with the review process? Like, does Apple want to know what sort of web views you're embedding there? What kind of page content that has?
It's a great question. I don't know how thoroughly they look at it, but basically the thing that's going to get you in trouble is if you start showing web views for, what was it? We ran into this in RHR where like we started showing them billing information in the app, and Apple was like, no, you can't have anything that lets people give you money outside of our in-app purchases, basically. That kind of stuff will be problematic.
Right. And I've heard that before. Yeah, like you can't pop open like a subscription modal or anything like that, or even a payment thing at all. I remember that being an issue a while back when that came up. And I have like very limited experience with the App Store, but I have shipped a couple apps for clients in the past using Cordova and similar, and that was also a thing too. You start including content from, you know, their website, and sooner or later you get, you know, you submit an update and they're like, nope, you have to remove all this stuff.
The other thing I just remembered was that the age rating for the app, I had to bump that up because
really?
In addition to that screen, there's also like, there's links to external resources. Like there's a Summit database website that has like people can post all kinds of reports and stuff on there and pictures and whatever. And so I have links to those, but those are basically external links to Safari View Controller. And so, I mean, the rating is like 13 plus or something, you know, it's up from 5 plus or whatever the minimum is. It's nothing restrictive, but that was the only concession I think I had to make for that. And the last piece of the stack, so I mentioned LiveView, GraphQL, Phoenix. I had to interface with this OpenID Connect interface, their single sign-on thing. That's been working great, Postgres. Using a little GenService to keep track of... Actually, no, I don't even think I really use GenService for much. I think all the state is just in the database. And because this app is small, self-contained, doesn't have a ton of external dependencies, I mean, it's just this isolated thing, I was able to deploy to GigElixir. And that has been, like, a great process. Their documentation, I just followed documentation, said, you know, set up the configs for the app, deploy it, and it's just freaking great. There are command line tools for managing it. I can get a remote console. I can push updates. It's just like Heroku, like a git push GigElixir, and it's deployed, right?
Right.
They do rolling blue-green deploys, remote consoles. I can view the status. I can, they're Docker's containers. I can SSH into them if I want, debug stuff. I'm not using any of the fancy hot reloading or clustering or any of that stuff, but that, you know, like I could if I wanted to. Not that I need it for this app. Although I did think of something at LiveView, and I haven't tested this yet. LiveView relies on WebSockets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm doing a rolling deploy while someone has a LiveView page open, at some point the server they're on is going to go down. And because the deploy process isn't going to know about that, it's not going to drain those connections, right? It's probably not going to wait. So I assume if, like, I'm on a settings screen and, you know, I do a deploy, I guess there's a chance that LiveView could basically be interrupted, right? Like, it disconnects and then has to reconnect.
Right.
Something that maybe you don't normally have to think about with static views. In this case, because everything's persisted in the database on every tap, the chance that anyone would ever even notice is basically zero. So it's fine for this application, but I guess it's something that needs to be thought about when you're doing these deployments.
Yeah. I guess anything that's real time like that, you sort of have to think about, or is stateful, right? Anything that's stateful like that, you sort of have to start to think about those things.
Yeah, or do hot upgrades if you can support that too. Obviously, that solves the problem.
Yeah, but I mean, that sounds at this point, that sounds like a pretty big edge case.
Yeah, exactly. It's I'm not worried about it at all. It's been a really great experience. Just developing for. We talked about this before, and developing for iOS for me is such a different experience, in terms of, just the way I architect the application and just the everything, because it's like a static compiled thing that you like ship off to someone, and it's, you kind of know what the environment is, right? Like, you're not running in a browser. You're able to test it in different devices, a few different devices, and know that it's going to run pretty much the same everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the simulator, obviously, to help you. I just make a lot of concessions in my iOS development that maybe I would tend to engineer a lot more in my web applications. But it's nice to be able to just like ship something, commit it, and know that if I pick it up 6 months later, maybe I have to update Xcode or whatever, but like I can pick it up and it'll just compile and run on a device. That's I don't know. It's just something about the way that you kind of handle these compiled projects is kind of satisfying. You know, you've kind of like shipped a product as opposed to like having an infinite version of something. I don't know. I just tend to approach it differently.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm thinking about that. It's interesting because it's like I coming up in like web programming specifically, not really having shipped anything that's sort of very version specific, right? You ship an update to the App Store and that lives at that version until you ship a different update, right? So you have very incremental versions versus the web where it's sort of fluid. You can push as big a change or as small a change as you want. It doesn't matter. There's no version number to tick. So coming up in the web programming world, it's like you used to have to think or spent a lot of time thinking about which version of IE, which version of Firefox or whatever. So like whichever version of whatever problematic browser was existing at the time, will this work? What do we need to support, etc. And lately it feels like I haven't been thinking about that a whole lot. Like IE 11 generally is like okay, you know, some things it doesn't work, but it's generally okay. And then of course with newer things you have Chrome dominating stuff and you have Edge that's out there. So problems that I run into with IE are pretty slim, and I generally don't even have to think about it these days, which I don't know if that's good or bad. Like, I'm just sort of putting my hand in the head in the sand and not thinking about it, or the browsers are improving. And generally it's not something you have to think too much about unless you have pretty strict requirements.
Yeah, or unless you're doing something really cutting edge. Like in the early days when we were doing RTC stuff, like Chrome had the best support, and so that was basically all we could support for a while, and now it's gotten a lot better. But yeah, I think in general, browsers for most basic stuff, at least all the pain points, CSS, you know, Flexbox, and just CSS in general, like the box model and how that was totally broken, and, you know, JavaScript, what's the word, shims and stuff. Like, I feel like that stuff is slowly going away. I think it's definitely improved quite a bit. And plus, just the auto-updating model of browsers themselves, how browsers themselves are infinite versions now, and you just assume your browser is going to auto-update, and so you can make a lot of assumptions now about what versions people are running.
Yeah, I wonder if browser vendors have been more aggressive about forcing updates these days than they used to.
It's definitely more prevalent.
It feels that way. It definitely feels that way. Using Windows a little bit more, it feels that way. the Apple stuff sort of happens behind the scenes a lot, unless you have to restart your computer. And Windows can, but I don't know. Windows feels much more forward facing in terms of like, hey, you have to do this, you have to change that. You know, it feels more in your face, sort of. But with browsers, like, occasionally I look up in the corner and there's an update, and whenever I just restart Chrome or restart my computer, the browser's automatically updated for me.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm probably digressing from your original point.
Oh, no. I mean, that's a very good point. Like, yeah, the platform for the web is also definitely less of a moving target than it used to be.
Yeah.
So, what else? Yeah, so I finally got the app back out there. Again, minimum functionality. I didn't even have push notifications in there at first because I just wanted to get it out there. I added that in the next point release. And everyone was just like super happy. Like this is kind of one of the things I hadn't anticipated. You know, originally when I wrote this app, I wrote it for me. I had a need. I wrote it for myself. And then I said, okay, if I have a need for this, other people probably have a need for this. I'll release it, and that will be that. And originally, everything was on device. I didn't want to have to support the infrastructure for the app. I just wanted to like put it out there and let people use it. Obviously, that did not end up well. I was relying on Parse for doing push notifications. Parse got bought by Facebook and then got shut down.
Oh, my. Yes.
So, you know, a lot of people got bitten by that. That was a problem. But anyway, I wrote the app for myself and kind of lost sight of, hey, like lots of people are using this. And as I've been spending all my time and energy on Remote Ham Radio over the past X number of years, I've lost track at this point, I haven't really been as directly interfacing with my customers as I normally have. You know, sometimes I definitely still do. You know, I'm chatting with people, I'm answering support tickets, taking feedback, helping people debug things on the phone, that kind of stuff. But having my own boutique niche application and being able to communicate directly with the people who use it was something that for a long time I kind of poo-pooed, shied away from. I kind of drew this line in the sand and disconnected. And I was, you know, my decisions are what I want to make, and you as a user, an uninformed user, your opinions and voice is probably not important to me. I just kind of shut myself off to that. And that was part of my rationale and, you know, way of thinking that led to shutting the app down in the first place.
Right.
And that's not really a great approach to things. You know, I convinced myself that I didn't have the bandwidth or the time or the energy to care about this application. But once I started to get back into it and forced myself to do the bare minimum, the momentum started building. And I started talking with people and getting feedback. Hey, it'd be nice if I could do a feature X, Y, and Z. And suddenly, the next point release, that feature was implemented for them. And I had this real-time discussion with the customers and being able to provide features that they were missing. or things that I had previously taken away for whatever reason and I thought weren't important, stuff like that. You know, it's a slippery slope. You can't give in to everything, but you can do a lot.
Yeah.
And having that discussion, having that line of communication open with people and starting to communicate with them, I think it makes them feel better. You know, it does give you kind of a sense of direction for the way that you should be taking the application. It really, you know, the momentum's really been building. And now that I've got this, I got the core functionality fixed, I actually have these features that that on my to-do list forever. I have these features that have been on my to-do list for forever that are cool features that A, nobody's asking for, but B, I know they're going to love because I think they're awesome. And I also want to make all these quality of life improvements, little polish, you know,
yeah,
that I normally wouldn't have either the experience or the time to spend on because I was just so focusing on the core functionality. Now that that's working, I just want to make it. I have this list of going of like my annoyances. Oh, I go to the screen and it's not, you know, it's not populated the way I want it to be, or it's not laid out right, or I need to be able to get to here from there. Just little things that no one's ever thinking about because they're just using the app day to day. But I know as the designer of the application, this could be way better. And so drawing that line between what I want and what I see versus what people are asking for and what they think they need, that's just been a really rewarding experience for me that I did not anticipate sort of picking up again.
It sort of refreshes that empathy, right? That reason, it gives you the reason, or it helps you remember like why you're doing a certain thing. In some cases, sometimes it can be stressful, I guess, depending on what you're asking, what they're saying back to you, right? But I think in many cases, it sort of helps refresh that empathy, helps refresh the why am I doing this? And I think that, you know, positive energy sometimes can lead to new ideas, better ideas. Maybe even, like you said, it's things that they haven't directly asked you for, but based off of your renewed energy and ideas after talking to them, it helps you push things forward a lot. And I think like Design Collective is a lot like that for me too. Talking to store owners and finding out what they're struggling with and what's slowing them down and what's causing them to lose sales and things like that. That sort of gives me a reason to jump back into the code and refactor things beyond. I think at some point you start going past the programming for the sake of programming or getting excited about a tech stack like Elixir for the sake of Elixir is cool. And you progress past that and you get into the, oh, this is a tool that I'm using to build something else for other people area. And talking with people, you know, once you're at that point, I think it can be really rewarding, like you're saying.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And I think you and I are still really sort of swept up in the tools themselves, Vue and Elixir and GraphQL, and being able to sort of bend them to our will and learn cool new things and ways to do things. As, you know, developers growing our knowledge base and just being better, but not too clever, obviously, right, with what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a tool. It's just a means to an end. That's something that I've always kind of prided myself on, is my ability to take a bunch of disparate things and gel them together in a way that hasn't been done before. Whether that's a bunch of different technologies in a stack, whether that's hardware and software, whether that's bring a new technology to an old and outdated world of technology, that kind of stuff I find really gratifying just in general.
Yeah, that's great. And it's especially cool that SodaCode has such a long history behind it. I mean, what year did you say you had started it again?
That was 2012.
2012, yeah. So, you know, it's been around, what, 8 years? If my math is correct. It's the end of the day, leave me alone. That's really cool. Like, that's 8 years, 8 year project. Like, how many, I don't want to necessarily, it's not like a full time project. So I guess you would be able to consider it a side project, but I wonder how many people's side projects have been alive and are going and still being used 8 years later.
Yeah, it's really true. I mean, I'm in the process of sort of cleaning house and going through my old servers, and yeah, I've been shutting old services down that are just for fun side projects that never went anywhere. This one's definitely staying up. You know, I now that I have a server component to the application, I actually get a little bit of analytics. I don't have any personal information, obviously. I don't even have email addresses in there, right? Mm-hmm. But because I just use single sign-on and use the tokens for everything. But I do, every time you connect, start up the app, it has to phone home so it can start creating, you know, keeping track of push notifications and stuff. So since I launched the app, it's been about 3-4 weeks now, maybe, since I re-released it. 541 devices have launched the app. So that's something. And among those devices, they've created 73 push notification subscription like filters, basically. It could be multiple filters per person, but call it 70 people sign up for push notifications. And on the weekends, dude, I was watching the logs. People are very active on the weekends hiking. I mean, the thing might go off. My phone might go off every 5 to 10 minutes with a notification, and it gets pushed out to a couple dozen people every time. It's kind of cool to watch. It's cool knowing that people's phones are buzzing everywhere. One of the features I added was the ability to customize the sound effects for your push notifications.
Yeah.
So when I was working with Parse, you could customize the sounds, but you could only really pick like one sound. And so I had this goat bleat noise that would call out whenever your push notification came in. So it sounded like this. So your phone calls me bleeding all day. And then I added a couple of this guy who actually hikes with goats. They carry his packs and stuff. Mm-hmm. He sent me sound effects of his goats. So I put them in the app as well.
Hold on. Hikes with goats.
Dude, they're amazing. He's up there operating radio and they're just hopping around on the rocks, chewing on foliage and just having a good time.
Are they on a leash or are they just like free range goats?
They're just his goats. They just follow him around.
Where's his... continue. Sorry. He sent you real... I had a lot of questions about that, but we can skip that. He sent you... That's really cool. He sent you sound effects of a real goat.
There's Peanut. And here's Rooster.
That's I don't know. That to me is really cool. Like, are those used in the app?
Yeah, those are your preferences.
That's really cool. Like... Easter egg sort of connection with a real user.
Mm-hmm. And he was the one who actually inspired me to even get into this part of the hobby. He had posted videos on YouTube all the time, and he's still really active in it. And his call sign is WG0AT. Think about it for a second.
Let me type this out. WG0AT. So wote, W goat.
That's his actual call sign.
What would my call sign be?
You could pick whatever you want, as long as it's an FCC valid call sign.
What are the criteria for it being a valid call sign?
So it can start with an A or a K or an N for starters. Those are the US, and a W, A, K, N, and W. And then it has to be 2x3. So 2 letters, a digit, and then 2 letters.
Okay.
Or like 1 or 1x3 or 1x2 or 2x1. So you could be like KS3AN if you wanted to be.
KS3AN.
Or you could do your initials.
So how do you claim this? Do you register it somewhere? Like how do I claim to this K?
You gotta apply to the FCC. If it's available, you get it. And if it's not, it's a lottery.
I'm not doing that.
You get your license, man. It's easy. Just take a multiple choice test.
I have a driver's license. That's the only license I need. So I only need one license in my life.
A license to kill.
Yeah. I don't have one of those, though.
That we know of.
That's cool, man. It sounds like it's been a rewarding experience.
Yeah. And like I said, I've got this really good head of steam right now working on it, working on one cool new big feature that I'm going to release. Then there's going to be a polish, get rid of my annoyances release. And then I'm just going to let it sit and maintain it. Collect some feedback and see what people think and just kind of maintain it from there. And yeah, it's been really nice. And you know what? Now I want to go do this again now. You know, once the weather's getting nice here, nothing prevented me from going out on a hike, coronavirus wise.
Sure.
You know, as long as I'm staying away from people. So yeah, once it gets a little nice here, I'm going to find some mountaintops near here. I don't have a goat to bring with me, though. I don't think Bucky would really do well outside. We tried to put him on a leash once, and he was just not having it.
You could get one of those cat carrying backpacks that has a little fish dome on top.
Oh my God.
I've seen those.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, I've seen dogs in those before too, like little dogs.
Speak of the devil.
Yeah, we took I got to hang out with Greg a couple weeks back, and we took a 7-mile hike with Watson. I think Watson slept for like 2 days. He was pretty tired afterwards.
That's great. He can keep up for that long?
Yeah, I mean, we were walking pretty slow, but yeah, we went to the Marin Headlands, which is if you go over the Golden Gate Bridge towards leaving the city, away from the city, the hills, like there's like one patch of land where there's no buildings. Those are Marin Headlands. So there's lots of hiking and stuff up there. So it was pretty fun.
That's cool. I've been up there. I went up and visited a couple times when I was in Santa Rosa. And dude, watching people bike up that road up to the top.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Like I wanted to like cheer for them. It was amazing. I had a friend who did it, and he said like, you just can't stop. Like as soon as you stop, you're done. You just have to keep going.
That sounds miserable. It's like the little train that could. You just got to keep going. Keep going, keep pushing, keep pushing.
I think I can.
Right.
The thing I liked about the Marin Headlands was all the crazy World War II stuff that was up there, old bunkers, and they had these big artillery cannons and turrets and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I had no idea, but it makes sense. I mean, that's a really, it'd be something you'd want to protect, I guess.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that either until we walked up on it. We're like, what's all this stuff? But yeah, it's pretty cool. It feels so interesting. Like it's so close to the city, but it feels like such a foreign place when compared to like San Francisco or Oakland.
Driving up, I think it's Route 1 from the north there along the coast. That is wild because it's just nothing, 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 nothing. And then trees and little tiny towns, bodega and all this stuff. And then you come around like the hill there and there's just the city.
Mm-hmm.
And what's it, Sausalito and all that stuff. It just blew my mind again. Like you said, how close to this huge center of population all this wilderness was. I still don't really get it.
Yeah. I think Highway 1 is one of my favorite places, especially going south farther. It's, yeah, I don't know. It's just an experience. It's a really cool place, really special place, I think.
You see any effects in Santa Rosa after all the fires that they had there last year?
No, actually, but I don't travel anywhere here. There's like a 2-block radius.
I guess not. Okay.
Yeah. I don't have a car. I didn't have a car before the quarantine and now we're quarantined. So I hit like the Whole Foods and I've been to Costco, in a few block radius within my apartment, but that's really it.
That's the Whole Foods with the bar in it.
Yes.
We used to go there for lunches. So good. Sit in the middle of the grocery store, have a local craft beer and a fancy ham and cheese sandwich. It's the best.
Yeah, it's a pretty good Whole Foods. They got some tasty stuff in there, that's for sure. I try to avoid it as much as I possibly can.
Just don't make the cardinal sin of shopping at Whole Foods and get mac and cheese from the salad bar.
What now?
You know how they have like the pay per ounce salad bar?
Mm-hmm.
Dollar for dollar, the most expensive mac and cheese you can buy. It's not even that good.
Yeah, New Leaf is the same way as well.
Anyway.
Yeah, I'm just tapped out and it's not even Friday.
That's all right. Use Friday, recoup. You got the weekend. Quarantine, stay in. Netflix and chill.
Yeah, that's probably the plan. More like play some Minecraft and chill.
I will be down for that as well. I'll be joining you. For those who are not aware, after Sean convinced me to play Minecraft last week, I did get in on the server and started building some things. Got Jess back into it too, so got a big happy Minecraft server family over there now.
We're all working towards a common goal in Minecraft. It feels good.
Obeying Paul's every command.
Yes, but also last night we got, Paul and I, we built a wither skeleton farm, and so now we have beacons so we can insta-mine blocks.
I know some of those words.
Yeah. Well, if you want to know more of those words, or anyone else wants to know some of those words, let me know. The server's open. Just send me your tag, and I'll send you the IP address, and then we can meet by the stash.
Someone's asking you in Discord to invite you right now. Invite them.
Yeah, I should probably do that. It's a popular server now.
Well, thanks for listening to me talk about Soda Goat. you know, I figure once every 8 years is probably good. We can wait again to talk about it. It's fine. It's just been a cool experience. I just really want to get that off my chest and out to the world. And, you know, it's pretty minor updates from this point on. So no news is good news.
Yeah, no news is good news, right? I bet it feels good. That makes me want to sort of revive a couple of things I have going, but it sort of comes down to energy at this point. I'm sort of conserving my energy for this new DK project that I'm working really hard on. So it's like, I'm trying to do it really well. I'm trying to do it, keep things as simple as possible. At this point, it's just like Postgres with some Elixir bindings into it and out of, you know, and some GraphQL stuff, but we can talk more about that next week. But I'm pretty happy with what's happening so far. Like really, really pushing Postgres or using what Postgres has to offer in terms of L trees, and for materialized paths and full text searching capabilities. And, so like literally a really quick teaser, I guess, for next week would be that today, I've really just been trying to avoid putting Elasticsearch into this project. You know, we could do it, use it for search. It could solve a lot of problems, but also I just don't want to have to deal with all the syncing stuff, the updating the index concurrently stuff. I just don't have that big moving piece as of right now. And so, you know, Postgres has the full text searching capabilities. And so instead of, I think a lot of tutorials you see, if you search for like Postgres full text search, there's a function called 2TS vector, which takes a string and it converts it to a vector data structure. And the vector data structure basically trims up words and gets rid of extraneous words. And then it's basically like a mapping of words that are eligible for matches, right? Sort of a normalized structure.
And it knows about the English language and, mm-hmm. and adapts itself to that, right?
Yep. And you can provide custom synonyms and custom dictionaries and stems and stuff. So it gets you, you know, a decent bit of things. So, but what normally people do is they just tell you, oh, when you're running the query, just cast whatever column you want to search to TS vector. And then whatever you're sending it, you want to cast that to a TS query. That's fine. But if you want to start like, so like if you're searching for a product and you want to match on name, description, and SKU, and maybe some categories, well, then you're casting quite a few pieces of information for every product that could possibly match. And that could be pretty CPU intensive, right? Like, so the whole thing about Elasticsearch is you want to bulk update indexes because it's a big CPU task. And so you don't want to do a bunch of small writes. And so what I did was I created a new column on products called search vector. And as of right now, I'm using a trigger for this, but eventually I want to swap it out into a change set function, but I would have to write my own ecto type for TS vector. But anyway, I'm using a trigger. And so when a product is inserted or updated, it concatenates the name, the SKU, and the description into a TS vector column on products. And so the search function in the Phoenix context is just searching that one column, which is, again, it's the combined pieces of metadata I want to search. And so we can skip the whole basically index creation or runtime situation on products. So we have a pretty okay full text search implementation for products on the new setup now with, you know, pretty minimal, I would say, moving pieces, no new technologies or anything like that. So
instead of doing the change set thing, couldn't you just do an ecto multi with some raw SQL and do it that way? Just go straight to the middle?
Maybe. The problem that I ran into with that was that you still have to write the custom ecto type so it knows how to cast it back to the database. So Postgrex, the adapter for ecto and Postgres, ships with a type, but you can't use that as an ecto type. So you actually have to tell ecto how to serialize and cast the TS vector stuff to and from the database. So
okay, I was just thinking just do an update in raw SQL. Don't even try to return it to ecto. Now, just to confirm, we spent a whole episode talking about how you're going to use common table expressions for your category things.
Yeah.
And now you're telling me you're using L trees and materialized paths?
Yeah, CTEs are out.
CTE, sell. Materialized paths, buy.
Yeah. We can talk. Yeah, we'll talk more in depth about it, but it's working pretty well so far, especially in used in conjunction with Postgres full text searching things.
That's cool. I want to hear about it.
Teaser.
Until next time.
Until next time, yeah. If anyone does want to get on some Minecraft, let me know.
You can let Sean know on Twitter @SeanWashBot. or you can let Neo know on Twitter, and I'll let Sean know, or Shrockwell. Tweet the show, DNC Cast. She'd make a big DNC logo on our server out of colored blocks.
I bet we could.
Make like a billboard. It'd be cool.
I bet we could. And as always, show notes are going to be available at dnc.show. So everything we talked today, from Star Trek Picard, Soda Goat, Key Cloak, you know, Phoenix Live View, Parse, which actually seems to have come back around. Parse.com. Is it Parse.com? Is it Parse? Platform.org is a thing. So it seems like it's been resurrected and open sourced.
Yeah, I think you had to self-host it.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, all those links are going to be in the show notes at dnc.show.
We'll also post the show notes on spectrum.chat. You can see those links over there and chat with us and have real-time discussions. Come say hi.
And as always, thank the Spectrum for having us and putting us out in the world. Shout out to Sarah. Shout out to everyone at Spectrum. Shout out to all the shows on the network. Head on over to DNC. Dot show is not the right word. Head on over to spec.fm to check out all of the design and developer-related podcasts that they've got going over there.
And then go to dnc.show.
And then go to dnc.show.
Well, Sean, stay happy, stay healthy, do good things, get some rest, drink some water, brush your teeth.
And floss.
And floss.
Don't forget to floss. Equally as important as brushing the teeth.
Especially if you have a cleaning appointment in coming up in 2 days, and you got to floss like crazy, so you don't lie when they ask you if you're flossing.
Yeah, they usually don't specify the time frame. Have you been flossing for the last year?
Yeah, you don't have to lie.
Yeah. All right, man. I'll see you in the blocks, I guess.
All right. All right.
See ya.
The blocks for you.